PHP Radio
on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network,
your number one source for all things golf.
Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.
This episode of the Off Course Podcast is brought to you by Evolve Golf. They're a company who is absolutely committed to making products that are better for the player, the course, and the planet. You've probably seen some of their divot tools, ball markers, motion wool socks, leather works, and my personal favorite, the Epoch Golf Tee. You should go over to www.evolvegolf.com and see all the fantastic products they have that you might love to incorporate into your game. Hello, you golfing legends, and welcome back to another episode of the original Off Course. I'm your host, Dan Edwards, and joining me this week is my good friend, Mr. Josh Babbitt. He is El Jefe over there on Hackers Paradise. Although some would like to argue we tell him what to do. Not many people do that, though. What's up, Josh?
How are you?
I'm good, man. I played
do
a lot
like
of golf.
My quarter zip that I'm wearing?
No, it's very insulting. You know, honestly, though, and we're already off on a tangent here, I'd be more offended if you wore a Rays shirt because
we just swept the Blue Jays,
swept the ever loving crap out of the Jays.
This is America, Dan.
It's very upsetting.
Yeah, I understand.
Yeah, man, I'm doing great. I played a lot of golf over the last week, which is amazing. Had a chance to hit some new product, like the new Gen 5 Hazardous Yellow, which I'm crazy excited about.
Yeah, that's a good one for you. You've been a yellow fan for a decade.
Yeah, well, I have. Do you want to just get right into the meat?
Should before we just get that there? Let me say, okay, we're recording. This isn't coming out today, but we're recording on the 17-year anniversary of THP. Did you know that?
I did know that because I saw the thread on THP. I don't have it marked on my calendar, but I did see the thread.
Yeah,
that's pretty awesome, man.
Years. Yeah, it's a little humbling, but yeah, 17 years.
How are you going to feel at year 20? What's that going to feel like?
Oh, I'm going to feel old because I already feel old, but pretty excited, I'm sure. I think at year 20, if people are around and still care about what we do, we're going to throw a pretty big party.
Nice.
Yeah. So anyway, let's get back to your
thing. No, that's good. Here. I actually just celebrated 15 years last week on THP. You live it every day. So it's probably different from most. It absolutely is different from most. But every once in a while, I get a chance to have a moment like that. And I look back at all the things that have been accomplished, not just from my golf story, but also from the THP story. Over my 15 years on the site, it's kind of fun, man. It's like building a legacy, something that really matters and impacts a lot of golfers.
Yeah, you know, like I said, it's humbling, but the public life that we chose in a transparency kind of way is not for everybody. Obviously, you know, things change. I got married on that website, not literally. Also shared divorce on that website and how amicable it was and how we're still business owners together and everything. It's part of my life, not just from a career path. And I believe that to be the case for a lot of different people. And that's just kind of what we believe in, is that the community was around. And when we set it up, and I don't know if I've talked about this before, but when we set it up, the idea was to be an online country club of sorts. So open to the public and everything. Like the opposite of a country club where, you know, it's not an invite only or pay your way, but at the same time have a country club feel where you pull up a chair and share stories. And that's kind of what the idea behind it was. And here we are 17 years later.
You know, I like to think that I have a couple different worlds I live in, and there's a lot of folks at my golf course who know what I do and a lot of that know that I do something, but don't understand any of it, which is a lot more common. But it's fun to think like how segmented that is, but also how fulfilling each one can provide. Yeah. I was thinking a lot about that lately, and man, it's just a cool thing.
As
the real host behind me gets settled in for that.
Well,
episode.
Yeah, now we can get started.
Yeah. Well, I originally wasn't going to talk about it, but I think it is a really fun piece of the story that Gen 5 Hazardous Yellow just arrived here. I just plugged it in. The other day, and there was the timing was kind of impeccable because my partner, if you will, the guy who I generally ride with at my course, got a random shaft handed to him by his golf coach a week ago. And we've been talking a lot about what's good for him, what's good for his game over the last few months as he finds his driver swing. And the funniest part was I was sort of objective of it. Like I was not impressed. I was like, okay, I'm sure that guy knows exactly what he's talking about. And lo and behold, he shows up and there's an OG hazardous yellow with like the tour paint. So it was black all the way down with the yellow. And I'm like,
yeah,
he was expecting me to say something hateful about the shaft. And I said, dude, that's my favorite shaft of all time. He's like, yeah. Oh, that's a good thing.
Now, did you prefer the tour version with the black with the yellow like it is now? Or did you prefer the one that most golfers saw, which was the yellow across the whole shaft?
The and there full is a correct yellow? Answer. There is a correct answer. I don't think I have one. I think
it's definitely the yellow shaft.
The full yellow. Yeah. Well, I had the yellow in my fairway wood and like the full yellow. But the most time I spent with the driver was with the all black with the yellow writing.
Boring.
I mean, that's fine. It's not the worst thing I've been called. So
that's true.
Anyway, so full circle, he pulls this out. I'm like, oh, that's crazy. That's my favorite golf shaft. He's, oh, I thought you were going to hate it. I said, no, I have the Gen 5 curing at my house right now for our round tomorrow. So, you know, he's excited about what he's doing, but it's also this solar full circle story because years ago, it's what I loved. And now I'm in this new version. But there was kind of a gap in between. They shifted it a little bit. It got involved with RDX and smoke and, you know, sort of moved away from.
Do you think your shaft looks down at his shaft as inferior being old tech?
I don't know. It'd be like,
I mean, probably no more than you're already looking down at him for using such an old shaft when the new one is now out.
I had big plans to look down at him. I'm incredibly proud of him actually for the choice he made or the choice he didn't make, the choice he was forced into. I think it's more like that old pro looking or that new pro looking up at the old pro being like, all right, this dude's pretty cool.
Yeah. Okay. I can accept that.
That's my take. So anyways, THP has a bunch of guys who are about to get the shaft in for testing.
Yeah.
If you follow the hazardous yellow story at all, definitely go take a look at what's going on there. They'll be getting them soon. And I'm sure we'll go through the very challenging process of reviewing a shaft.
It is hard. You know, I think that reviewing equipment in general is hard. It's a lot of fun. If you love golf and you love golf equipment, it can be a lot of fun, but it is challenging because you feel like a lot of times, well, there's two schools of thought. A lot of times, what am I going to say? Like, that's not repeating what somebody else has already said. And also, are you talking to yourself if nobody responds right away? And the truth of the matter to that is both no. You're never going to run out of things to say, even if you talk about the feel. But you might feel like you're talking to yourself, but no. Thousands upon thousands of people are going to read what you write. That's why we always say, please give us 100% honesty.
We had a thread on THP the other day talking about the changes to the playoffs for the PGA Tour.
Yep.
And someone made a comment about how they had a burner account. It was probably their burner account on the site. I'm like, I don't think you guys realize it's probably more accurate than you think that a lot of these
companies, sure.
Entities or whatever are paying very close attention considering the size of our community.
Yeah, I can tell you for fact, it is not far-fetched. There are tour players, there are golf industry people, there are USGA people, there are PGA Tour headquarters people that are on the forum. I see the accounts and the IP addresses every day.
Yeah. I've been probably blacklisted by a handful of them at this point, considering
I'm pretty, like, I live about 7 minutes from PGA Tour headquarters, and I swear every time I drive by it, I hear sirens.
That's, yeah. I mean, we've been pretty honest on there. I'm not sure. Actually, this does segue pretty well into one of my talking points today. Because it's tour related, but it also has to do with the average golfer as well. I've been a long-standing hater when I have to watch the guys on tour slam a club or do damage to the golf course based on
Terrell Hatton fan.
Actually, there's one where he sort of just like lobs, like he's casting a fishing line, his iron. And I thought it was the funniest damn thing in the world because I don't think it did any real damage. What makes me mad is when these guys tomahawk their club down and do damage to the ground. I really struggle with that. It doesn't require spitting into a cup or having a tantrum in the sand to really make me dislike what you're doing.
Well, okay, let me ask you a question about that then. So you saw, I'm sure, the Wyndham Clark thing.
Yes, this is sort
now,
of where
he did
it's
not cause
from.
Any course damage. Now, he almost caused some human damage, but he didn't cause any course damage. Do you consider that the same type of issue?
So there was a window. We had a fun discussion on this on THP, and I thought the situation where I've seen guys lob their club into the water, of which it would never return, with the exception of the Trumpster going to grab Rory's iron that one time. That doesn't bother me as much as it humors me, because it's only damaging the player and the potential the player has. This is a little bit of a mixed bag. What I thought was really interesting is he bashed it through a sponsor's sign.
Yes.
And it's like, all right, you didn't hurt the course, but the people who that sign belongs to probably aren't particularly happy.
Although you could also make the argument that more eyeballs were on that sign after him doing that than there were before.
Fair play.
Now, I would say that that's a parallel directly to throwing your club in the water, which again is a sponsor's sign, whether it's known or not. I mean, Rory McIlroy throwing a TaylorMade iron into the water is a sponsor's sign. TaylorMade doesn't, you know, he doesn't play TaylorMade without being paid, and TaylorMade's not paying him to not play their clubs.
Maybe it's different because it's his sponsor rather than the tour sponsor. Interesting. I don't think that's what, other than the optics of it, I don't want kids to have to watch that and think that they should emulate it. Yeah. In fact, I've had many conversations with my 9-year-old about appropriate damage to the course, and the only time that's right is when you're swinging. And trying to hit a golf ball, I should say. The one thing that really set me off in the Clark thing wasn't so much the sign. It was that it was like 3 feet away from a Marshall volunteer. Mm-hmm. Incredibly close to striking him. And by incredibly close, I mean a couple feet. And if it were you, you'd probably be pretty terrified in the moment as well.
For sure.
At no point did he turn around and apologize. He noted that his club was damaged and threw the piece of it, I think the shaft, sort of at another area that was out of the way and left it all where it was. So I think that part was more challenging to me, that there was no regard for the marshal in the moment. And it's like, you guys are called professionals for a reason. And I understand, and this is where I think people get really stuck in, like, look, golf's hard. These guys aren't robots. I'm like, yeah, but they're also professional. And what does that mean? Does that mean
can you imagine if at your job that you decided to act out when you were having a poor performance day? I mean, literally, I have a poor performance day pretty much 5 to 6 out of the 7 days a week. Like, if I started throwing stuff in the office or punching, like if I picked up my keyboard, because, you know, everybody knows I'm just a keyboard warrior, and chucked it at my screen, could you imagine, like, the thing? It's a different thing, but I have a great story. Let me tell you about the last time I ever slammed a golf club.
Okay.
So I made a joke on this on another podcast a couple of years back, where I said the best part of golf, watching people be miserable on a golf course, if you're a people watcher like me, is when they chuck the club and then they have to do the walk of shame to go back and find it and see what it looks like.
Yeah.
But the last time I ever slammed a club was probably 16, 17 years ago. And I was never a big club slammer in general, but I had been playing pretty good golf. My handicap was sub 4, I think, at the time. And I missed the first 7 fairways by a huge margin. And I picked up my club, and as I'm walking off, like, I wasn't on the tee box anymore, I was walking back toward the cart, I slammed it. Unbeknownst to me was a concrete block under it. And I watched the club head completely shatter in a million pieces, and I was playing in a match against somebody, and I had to play the rest of the day without it. And that's the last time I ever slammed a golf club.
Yeah, it's nice when you actually pay for your bad decision rather than just
leave it for other people.
I use the example on THP about grabbing my keyboard in the middle of a busy office and lobbing it across the room at a wall had I like deleted the wrong thing on an Excel spreadsheet. Just like the idea that that's so absurd there should translate, I think, to the tour. I don't think they should get a pass because golf is hard. I don't think
in general people don't view professional golfers as their job? They view them as extraordinary individuals that can play a game like nobody else. And I'm not sticking up for it because I'm against all that stuff. But it's not viewed as a job until, of course, it comes down to the pace of play argument. Then every asshole is allowed to take 7 minutes lining up a putt with Aimpoint because they're putting for $1 million.
Yeah, I the one thing that I loved about the thread that was on THP is there was like, what can we do to solve this? And not unlike a lot of other things the tour has wrong, I think the idea that this is a very easy fix by damaging players' scores or paychecks would be the most useful way to go. I mean, the idea that doing something like that would cause Clark to simply walk off the golf course with a disqualification would be spectacular. I mean, I would love nothing more than that.
Hey, but here's a question. What's the line?
Yeah, where does it draw?
Yeah, like is throwing your golf ball in the water after a bad hole, is that DQ? Or is it only if you cause course damage? Or is it, you know, like where do you draw the line?
Yeah, threat to individuals, course damage, club damage, I think is even a good argument. And frankly, if you ask Matt Fitzpatrick, he doesn't believe they're stringent enough on that. Yeah. You know, there's plenty of ways to do this to deter the guys from wanting to. What do you think?
I think that there's a small segment of golfers on the PGA Tour and at the high amateur level and everything that are absolutely effing head cases. They're the people who cannot take a swing, regardless if they're the first group out with 17 million things going through a pre-shot routine. They can't do any of that stuff. And any change, you will watch them turtle off the tour like Matthew Wolf.
Well, let's segue this a little bit into a question about THPers, because for whatever reason, we hold ourselves to higher regard than the tour does themselves when it comes to club slamming. Well, just like anything else, you know, there's an internet for a reason that you don't have to validate. So that's very helpful. But one of the things that THP does is takes golfers from everywhere to beautiful golf courses, part of the Dormy Network properties. And there is a level of expectation when you get on site there, from the way you dress to the way you represent yourself to the way you act on the golf course. So let's move this into what's appropriate from your perspective as the host of one of these. What would you do, and where do you draw the line when a golfer comes in slamming clubs or throwing them?
You know, normally we don't even have a briefing before we do the show, but you told me this was going to be a topic, and I've been thinking about it since then. I can draw a line in the sand of definitive changes before we brought people to the Dormy Network, meaning we were going to beautiful resort courses like PGA National, TPC Sawgrass, things like that, and then after. And I think there's a level of expectation being a guest at a private property than there is going to a resort course that anybody can walk up to. Now, I've made it very clear. We are not affiliated with the Dormy Network in any way. We are strictly members, and we bring people as our guests to them. I don't think we've had an incident there, but I can say I've seen a club throw that was fairly aggressive, not in the neighborhood where it was going to get to anybody or cause anything, but like I saw somebody chuck a club a good 10 to 15, 20 yards. First, it was pretty amazing. Like, I'm not sure I could throw a club that far, but it's a unique. Okay, so let me say it like this. If you gave your next door neighbor a new couch, like you decided he was a really nice guy and you wanted to gift him a couch, and you told him you were coming by, or you told his wife or partner that you were coming by, and you walk in and he was taking an axe to that couch, what would you think?
I want to know why I haven't been gifted a couch is my problem.
You need better neighbors. You live in Ohio.
it's, but you would probably weird, think right?
sociopath, right?
Yeah, obviously, right.
Now, if you found out later that there was a snake in the middle of the couch, you'd be, okay, well, I kind of get it then. But it's kind of the same thing. If you give somebody a brand new driver and then on the 15th hole, right after giving it to them, they're slamming it onto the ground repeatedly, you wonder if there's something loose upstairs a little bit. Mm. But I get the like, golf is a weird freaking game. We all have these levels of expectations that are so unrealistic that it's ridiculous. We did a thing with ShotScope, which you're using ShotScope now, and they were kind of talking through what people, what their level of expectations are as us amateurs versus PGA Tour players. And it puts it in such perspective that we expect to hit every green from 125 yards, and the best players in the world don't even come close to that.
120, yeah, 64%, as it turns out.
Yeah, and we expect to hit it every time and cannot believe when we possibly miss.
Yeah. Yeah, ShotScope is an interesting segue on this. That's been an adventure. You use it as well, right?
I do.
And you've been pretty comfortable using it for some time.
I wasn't at first, but okay. I am now.
So recently I posted a bunch of my stats. Do you ever feel like you're just oversharing? And I don't mean like...
pretty much every day.
Not like you're saying too much. It's like you're exposing a very personal part of your...
You mean like marriage and divorce?
Golf world.
Oh, no. Everybody knows that.
With the masses. Do you know what I mean? Like, I put up my numbers. I'm like, I'm so glad these look okay. Otherwise, I'd be mortified to share these things.
You're going to give everybody else that don't have your numbers a complex.
Well, one of my favorite things on ShotScope is you can change your strokes gains against like tour pros or zero handicaps or five handicaps or 15 handicaps. There's a lot of options there. And my favorite thing is to not compare to the tour. It's to compare
now,
realistically.
You're a pretty good golfer and you play a course a lot. You play a singular course a lot, your home course. How would you compare if you do it to a scratch golfer? Because you're close to that right now and you were on the plus side for a long time. If you, because I think you're like a one or a two right now.
Yeah, if I'm lucky, more like a three.
So if you were to put that against a scratch golfer, what is ShotScope saying you are? Where do you need to make up or where are you losing?
There's not a lot. I think short game maybe.
Yeah.
Probably approach a little bit. We all know the challenge off the tee, but unfortunately, I play a golf course that has a lot of tee variety, so I can control it a little bit with the alternative options. But that's also part of what I really like about it is they have this element to it where it shows you your scoring average based on your tee shot.
Correct.
The club choice.
It's pretty cool.
And I saw that for the first time the other day, and I was like, oh, wow, I should never use that club again on that tee. It was the one random bad shot that I never tried again. But
one of the things that I've always really liked about the service is that part of we think we know our games and then we analyze it and we realize how off we were. Like if you would have told me that I lose more strokes with a wedge in my hand within 25 yards of the green or with irons in my hand than I do with putter or driver, I would have said you were crazy. But the data says it's not even close. Like I lose more strokes on approach and around the green than anything else in golf.
It, one of the big hurdles I had with ShotScope early on was I'm so afraid to pick a club going into the wind, knowing fully well that the results of that club will be woefully short of my performance average.
Yeah,
call it that average. Because that exists in there. What I noticed after 20 plus rounds now on it,
it doesn't matter.
It doesn't make a difference.
No.
So I'll give you an example. I used my 4-iron this weekend. It was easily a 2-club wind, if not more in some cases. At one hole, I hit it 247 yards. And let's be honest, I don't hit a 4-iron 247 yards. And then in the other direction, I hit it 175 yards because it got chewed up by the wind.
Yep.
And when I had a chance to go and look at these numbers after the round and as it included into all my other data, it really had no impact.
None.
The 247 yard shot didn't crazy bump it, and the 175 didn't drag it down a lot. What I think is really interesting is I look at the performance average after 20 plus rounds, and I see a lot of what I think my potential is as I work through like really great shots versus okay shots in my arsenal. And then I see this average number, and that to me is more of a reflection of a culmination of what I've been able to do. So, so I think that's really interesting. I expected it to be harder to get comfortable with that.
No, it just takes rounds.
It takes time.
Yeah.
And after 20 plus rounds, I'm really comfortable with the numbers that it spit out. And I'll tell you what, Josh, I haven't even played my best version of golf. I'm still finding flush shots and missing them a fair bit, trying to get my move right for 2025. It's not quite there, but it is still hidden in the data.
Well, it's interesting too, because as you said, or as I said, you're a pretty darn good golfer, and especially at the ball striking level and score, because you do play a course that you know real well. Now take a guy who's a, we'll say a bogey golfer, maybe a 15 handicap, 16 handicap, and think of how good that data could be after 100 rounds or 50 rounds, let's say 50 rounds, one round a week for the year, and where they would be able, forget like just getting the data, but as somebody like me who went from being a pretty good golfer to a not so good golfer and now trying to get back to being at least respectable golfer, it shows me exactly what I need to focus on. And I realize this is coming off as salesy for ShotScope, and it's not, because let's just say you use any kind of data. The idea of the old pencil, well, I had three putts on this hole and two on this hole, and I missed a green. You have lines all over your freaking scorecard. It's so real life focused for me to say, oh shit, this guy is not good with his irons. In fact, I missed 15 greens last round. Now, were they bad misses? Not necessarily, but it did show me also, I have a tendency to fire at pins I have no business firing at. And that was one of the biggest awakenings for me, was grabbing my laser, shooting a green, and being like, okay, yep, it's a 158. Not thinking to myself, hey, Josh, this is 158 tucked front right. And what's your miss? Short and right. So what do? I shortside myself. That's an easy double bogey. Whereas if I had just played it to the middle, even if I miss either side, I'm fine. Two putt par, maybe a bogey. So it's that kind of stuff that really helps me around the course, and the knowledge that helped me get better. Because since switching back to it, I'm two strokes down on my handicap.
Wow. Yeah, the hole-to-hole visual where you can see the percentages missed is I think really playing into what you're talking about now.
Yeah.
I want to give a little call to action to those who are listening, who are on THP and ShotScope users. I want you to go in there and share with us what you believe the data is telling you is the best part of your game, and what you believe the data is telling you is the worst part of your game. I think that'd be a really interesting exploration, but I'm also curious to actually see visuals. So if you guys can, and I'll even accept the Montana Jeff picture of the picture.
Yeah, that was so weird.
Screenshots, boys, screenshots.
Yeah.
Long story short, it has been surprisingly easy to get accustomed to it. And I've been critical about data analysis for a long time for my game. I think I'm a pretty consistent player. And my thought was, I'm not going to gain because I already have a pretty good idea of what I need to resolve. But it's given me a more robust look at distance expectations, the hole-to-hole data, an idea of where I'm missing and where I need to resolve that, and just a general desire to improve those numbers.
Yes. Yeah, so, I would agree with that. I actually look forward to seeing what THPers have to say there.
I have another Josh Trigger segment, if you'd like to go down that route.
Well, it's pretty much everything at this point.
Well, I need to move my camera, so I hide that flipping logo on your chest. But this one, I don't like the way they win, no.
Okay.
I do like Barkov, though. He's pretty cool.
The irony being, if any of these players played for your team, you would love the way they win.
I don't know, because I don't, yeah. Anyways, this is near and dear to your heart. It is a conversation that has created massive discussion on THP and pretty polarizing perspectives. And it revolves around the idea of, what is a gimme? Should gimmies exist? Should they change?
Did I hurt you in some way?
Yeah, you did. Yeah. Okay. You're wearing it, actually.
Yeah.
So we had a discussion on THP. I started one in joking, in jest, after our friends Ryan and Dean heckled me and then gave me very little, but I made all of them. So, you know, whatever to them. Anyways, we've had two really big discussions on THP about gimmies. I really would like to hear your take, not only what you believe to be, because I think you're a very generous guy when it comes to that, but also how you've reacted to the perspective of THP.
Okay. I am generous. I never thought it was it needed to be a black and white thing. I think it's up to the individual, but I also think there's a level of pettiness and stuff that doesn't need to be there. And I'll use an example. Somebody made a post that said, well, if I make them putt a 3-footer and they miss the 3-footer, doesn't that confirm the fact that it wasn't a gimme? Maybe. But what if they make the 3-footer? Does that mean you're going to give them every 3-footer from here on out? The answer is no. So that's a bullshit excuse right there to begin with. I believe that there's a difference depending on what you're playing in and who you're playing against. But, you know, if you're playing at like a THP event and there might be something on the line, but it's generally a special trip. And you say to somebody, I'm making you putt out everything all the way down, or you're putting if it's a foot or in, that's just being an asshole. And I don't think there's a place for that. My rule of thumb typically is if it's inside the length of my putter, which is just short of 3 feet, if I play a 35 inch putter, it's good in my book. Now, I have a caveat there, which is if it's for a birdie, I think you should make it, natural birdie. And if it's to win the match, I think you should make it. Winning a hole, I don't care. 3 feet's good with me. But those are my rules. I have had recently somebody me do that for them and then basically shit all over that and say, like, your rules mean nothing to me in the middle of a match. But, you know, like, everybody's going to find their way.
Huh. One of the challenges I've had, and I've asked people to do this, is to, when the next time they're on the golf course, lay your putter down and put a ball, one ball where the leather starts or where your grip starts between, so the length of the putter up until the point where the grip starts.
Roughly, and then 2 feet, 24 inches.
About 2 feet. And then put another ball down at the end of your putter. I think people would be shocked to know what a 2-footer was and would be shocked to know what a 3-footer is.
Correct.
There have been a lot of debates where I've said pretty comfortably, if you're inside the leather, unless it really genuinely means something or you're being rude to me, you're not going to putt that. I think between the limit of the grip itself is going to be dictated based on the quality, the kind of the putt, the time of the match, whether it's highly competitive. There's a lot of situations that are involved. More often than not, especially with the boys or at a THP event, I'm pretty inclined to give that putt, unless it's to win the match.
Yeah, I think to win a match, you should putt it.
I think people completely misrepresent that distance when they talk about what's good in their books. Some people say 4-footers, 5-footers. You're not going to lay down and be the distance of a putt and say that's good. There's just, I do not buy that. And well, I have not experienced that.
I've been known to give some pretty long putts, but typically it's in a friendly game, and or the flip side of that is we're a slow group and we need to pick up the pace. Like, I don't need somebody going, I know they have a 6-footer, I know they're going to miss it, and I know they're going to aim point both that 6-footer and the one coming back. Pick it up, it's good. I don't care if I lose a hole. Like,
I do prefer the idea of the good mentality where you're both of a similar, slightly out of friendship zone distance and say, hey, both played the hole pretty much the same way. Let's not let it be dictated by a 4-footer. Let's call these good and let's move on. I think so. That's
in the last event I was in, twice I offered that. Both times it was declined.
How early in the match were you?
Like halfway through.
Okay. So it wasn't a truly meaningful situation.
No. Both times. And both times it was declined. And I listen, that's your choice. But
sure.
I, after rolling in three 3-footers in a row, to then have somebody putt a 2-footer, legitimate 2-footer, that was clear that that's just the way it was going to go. It is what it is, and I'll putt them. But like, that's interesting choice.
The biggest challenge for me, I think, on the forum and the discussions, whether it's the actual length of the putt they're describing, anyone who says 3 to 4 feet, I've never played with that kind of person. 3 to 4 feet is not always good. It never is. But the other thing is when they,
I mean, you're a guy,
to,
right? You're a guy.
Yeah.
Well, there I know isn't measuring, a guy in the world that doesn't inflate or get numbers wrong
hard,
when it comes to measuring.
Yeah, I get it. But the other thing I don't like is when they compare it to the tour. I've seen a lot of Ryder Cup comparisons. It's like, boys, we're not playing for the Ryder Cup. We're not playing for the
President's
Cup.
We're also
not
playing on those greens.
We're not playing on those greens. We're not of that caliber. Whereas a level of expectation and gamesmanship. And that's where I get really stuck. If your goal...
You summed it up well right there. Cause so, and the way I view it is, like I said, if a putt is inside the length of my putter and I have a pretty good idea of what that is, it's good unless it's for natural birdie or to win a match. The idea that,
Hold on. Natural birdie only?
Yeah. Not net.
Not net birdie. You're going to gift a net birdie.
Yeah.
I'd be more inclined to gift a natural birdie than,
well, I understand that because you hate net birdies.
I hate getting net birdied. Yeah. I don't know what a net birdie is. I've never had one.
But no, I'll give the net bird.
really?
Inside the 3 feet. Like, if I'm not giving 4 feet there, but inside the length of my putter, yeah. I don't want to win that way. I don't want to win by somebody burning an edge on a 3-footer or missing that. I don't care enough about winning. Maybe that's what it is. And I know everybody's wired differently, but that's just not the way I want to win. I'd rather watch them implode on the tee box and go into the shit.
I understand what you're saying. And I know it tightens up a little bit at the end of the match.
Not for me, really, but for a lot of people it does.
For let's say a majority of golfers. Yeah. But I'm really surprised on the net versus gross.
Yeah.
I would think that. And maybe I'm just jaded at this point, but I would
generally speaking, the net birdie person is going to have larger swings throughout the round. I'm confident it's going to be made up somewhere else. And okay. I want to celebrate that person playing above their skill level more than I want to win because they played below it.
Gotcha. Well, I think we got time for one or two more thoughts. And I got some good ones here, buddy. If you want to continue to talk about torture or talk about something positive.
I'm good either way. I love being tortured.
All right. Well,
wait, that sounds wrong.
Starting out a year, I know it's a little different because you live in Florida and you have the freedom to play when you want. I know it gets a little warmer this time of year, but that's fine. Actually, probably not bad in where you are.
No, it's 80, 84.
Okay. Up here, especially starting the year, there's a lot of really bad golf that gets played early in the season from an expectation perspective. I think it takes a couple months to piece together what our versions of good golf are or is. So I'm curious your perspective on how you handle like that disaster round and what do you do when you get done with it? I know you're not exempt from them. I've heard you mention
I've had 5 in a row.
Questionable
up until my
rounds.
Last round I had 5 rounds in a row I didn't break 90.
Okay, so and what is it like for
bad,
you
bad golf?
I want to know mental thoughts throughout the round, but then what do you do after the round to change it?
So nothing usually. Usually change clubs, which is like the worst thing you can do. My general consensus over years of thinking about this. And I have a friend, we both have this friend who works in the industry, and he will sit in his car before he leaves the parking lot of the golf course and replay every bad shot in his head.
Like every bad one.
Yeah. That's crippling to me.
That's tough. Yeah.
Usually it involves the easiest way to get over it. It would be perfect for the segue for the quarter zip I'm wearing is to get some Dairy Queen. But normally it involves having a drink, getting lunch, taking my mind away from that disaster that I just threw up. Okay, we played in an event together in Texas at Briggs Ranch with Strix on Golf. And that final round is top five worst rounds I've played in golf in probably 10 years.
Really?
That's how bad. Oh, yeah, it was that bad. If you would have told me I shot 115, I would have believed you. Like, that's how bad it was. So much so that the caddy came after me and he's like, dude, are you injured? It was bad. I learned quickly, like, you got to just move on. I sink myself into something else.
What are you like during those rounds? I know it's harder for you as a host. You have to put on a show in many ways. Let's say casual round, you're out with the guys, not related to a THP event, and you are just playing like an absolute donkey. How are you mentally? And I want to preface this by saying there are so many people who are so much fun to be around when they're playing good golf, and then they start to play poorly and they are just rain on a sunny day. You know what I mean?
You know, I would say I'm a mixed bag if I'm being genuine. Normally, I'm totally fine. We'll start talking about sports or politics or whiskey or, you know, something else while we're playing. Maybe about the golf course, the architecture, you know, equipment, something like that. There's been one or two times recently where I could actually feel myself sucking the life out of our group. And man, when you do feel that, first of all, if you don't feel that, you're pretty much a sociopath. But if you do feel that, like, try to fix it.
Sure.
I immediately started talking about something different, which made it even worse because I was talking about a topic people shouldn't really talk about. But try to do something to take your mind away from being shitty at golf for that round and do something like that. Because like you said, there's people who are really fun to be around when they're playing good and people who aren't fun when they're not. It is kind of horrible to be around somebody if they're just miserable out there.
Yeah, you have to find ways to make it valuable or make the experience. I talk a lot to my 9-year-old about this, the idea that it really doesn't matter how you play to your friends, to the people you're playing with. What matters is the kind of person you are while you're out there. And for me, this has changed a lot over the last 10 years because now that I have a family, it's like I'm completely taking myself away from them for this amount of time to experience the game that I love. The idea that I'm going to be miserable for those 4 hours is brutal. The idea that someone else is going to make me miserable for those 4 hours is just as brutal. So I've been really zoned in on that lately. I don't know if it's the challenge of the spring or the fear that I'm that guy, or just making sure that my son realizes that he shouldn't be that guy. I've gotten really in tune with it.
That's a really interesting thing. My father, who gave up golf when I was born, but picked it back up again in retirement and was a pretty good golfer at one time. He's in his high 80s now, let's say. He used to tell me, he's like, could you imagine any other thing in the world that you were going to pay somebody $100 to be an asshole? And I started thinking about that. And he said, so think of the golf balls that you paid for that you're going to lose. Think of the greens fee you're paying for, the cart rental you're paying for, and you're doing all that to just be miserable. Like, either you need to find a different hobby or you need to look around at your surroundings. And I'm fortunate to play golf at some pretty nice places. If I'm ever truly miserable out there, I probably need to not play golf anymore.
Yeah, it's tough. And again, it's about the people around you.
You play a private course, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You pay a monthly dues. You pay a cart fee, most likely, because I know you're not allowed to have push carts. You do all that stuff. Could you imagine paying that monthly fee if you finished your miserable round and you were just like, you fuckers, you got to write this check out? Like, you would never do it. That's kind of the perspective I have now. It's like, I'm not going to just pay this money to be miserable.
Yeah. Well, I played a fair bit of golf this past week, more than I have in a while from a like everyday perspective. And my son said on Saturday, we were at the range after the round, just working on one of my friend's games. My wife texted me and said, hey, your son wants to play golf this afternoon. I'm like, oh God, I'm so exhausted right now. All right. whatever, bring him out here. I just booked a tee time for 9 and I'm like 6 holes into this. And I felt like a zombie. My body hurt, my heart hurt, but I was so happy to be out there. It's like, I can either be miserable and embrace everything that my body's telling me, or I can make this a memorable moment for my son, myself. And that really helped me. I think looking at it from other people's perspectives who are with you is such a better way to go about it.
What if you don't like the people you're with?
No, I would find new friends.
What I meant by that is, what if you got paired with a rando?
So if I was out there forcing myself to play an extra 9 with 3 people I didn't like?
Like, okay, I understand not everybody's at the private course, Dan, but a lot of people go and play as a single.
Yeah, that's hard. I think that's a real challenge. From
that different angle.
You're playing more for yourself at that point than others, I would say.
Right.
And I don't feel badly saying that, but I do feel like there should be an inherent effort there to make the people around you enjoy it just as much as you would prefer they let you enjoy it. We got paired up with a guy a couple weeks ago who he was older, so senior, and he played a very not young senior like you are, an older senior. And he played, you know, that boring directly in front of you, fully controlled shots.
Now I definitely feel targeted.
No, because he actually kept his in control.
Oh, so, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Definitely not me.
Let me get you out of here. Down the middle with a driver, easy iron to the green. And he was pretty fun to be around. But me and my friend were kind of on a different level, joking around all day. And he wasn't really doing that, but he was sort of just in it. I think I counted 4 club throws and 5 yells at himself being completely consistent with the exception of those shots. I'm like, dude, what world are you living in where you're spinning like a top?
Expectation thing.
It's crazy. Cause I'm like, if I'm your age, I would love to play golf like you. And you're mad about this one shot because the ground jumped up and bit your club as you tried to make contact on that par 3. So yeah, it was weird to me, but it didn't bother me in the way I thought it would. It was more entertaining to see a guy of his age and his sort of demeanor lose his mind a couple times. But it was weird. It was definitely weird.
Yeah, that's different.
Huh. Yeah. I don't know, man. I think people should definitely be more fun and appreciate what we're doing. And if not, you know,
if they level their expectations and realize they're paying to do this, and with both money and time,
paying for punishment. Yeah.
Yeah. Understand that this is fun. Nobody is just off making the tour.
Oh man. Do you have any thoughts today for me? Have I officially entertained you enough?
No.
No,
at all.
Tell me about these glasses you're wearing, man. I'm pretty sure I'm talking to a set of glasses right now.
Yeah, they're the Meta glasses. They have the speaker and the microphone. I use them at THP events to record some people swinging, so I don't have to getting a camera, doing all that stuff while you're still in the middle of playing golf can be a challenge. And doing it this way is quick and easy. It's borderline creepy for me because I'm not a big social media guy. But at least there's a light that lets somebody know I'm recording. So it's not like full on creeper.
Well, it's interesting because I've seen some video you've taken with it and you're exploring this from a golfer's perspective where you've hit some shots, some pretty questionable lies you've hit from, but some pretty good ones.
Those were placed.
You did. Oh, they were placed. I didn't know. Been reading your feedback on the forum about your current play. It's wild to look at. Do you think these types of glasses are the future of the video based experience, or are they just another solution for?
Yeah, just another. In my opinion, no. First of all, I don't normally play with glasses on. So the funny part is at the event, I'll take them off to swing.
Okay.
I don't like it. For people that do, I guess I don't know. I when Apple makes them, they'll be the norm is the easiest answer.
Fair enough.
Right now I'm glasses. Fairly confident that Facebook is listening to us. And if we were saying anything noteworthy, they would steal all this intellectual property.
Well, so we're in good shape then.
Yeah, we're good.
Yeah. It felt a little Blair Witchy to me. Yeah. But it was
definitely
also
out there. It makes you dizzy.
It's super fun to watch. So it's just that extra element to everything. Is there a level of balance to it? Like,
I haven't found it yet, but yeah.
What I mean by that is the gimbal is like really balanced, like smooth. Is it something like that in there? Nope. Or no? Not
it's
yet.
It's completely Blair Witch Project.
Yeah.
Which
okay.
Half of our audience probably don't even know what that is. But this is a true story. The first time I wore these, I was the round before I was putting really well. I had made like 4 or 5 legit 15 plus foot putts. And I was like, okay, I'm going to putt with the glasses on so I can record one going in. Didn't find the bottom of the cup the entire day. Not a 5 footer, not anything. Did not find the bottom of the cup the entire day.
Okay. So if I'm playing you in a match, I'm just going to ask you to wear the glasses.
Wear the glasses.
I'm pretty locked in.
Yeah,
then all
sure.
Your net birdies are good.
Absolutely.
Maybe net pars.
Most likely.
All right, my friend. Hey, any questions for me before we wrap up today?
Yeah. When is your next golf tech lesson? Cause I've been enjoying that journey.
Yeah, that's a really interesting question. I've got some soul searching to do on that. The last one wasn't as productive as the first couple were.
Yeah.
Let me TBD that.
Okay.
Is that fair?
No, not really, but okay.
I do think I need to get in there and have a conversation. Maybe do some practice. I really like that they offer up the practice sessions between your lessons. That's super helpful. Seeing my swing is both, and being able to see my swing
horrifying.
In a room by myself when people aren't judging
fun.
It, and then I can just hit the button and it all resets is one of my favorite things to do on the planet.
For it's sure.
Getting rid of it. But the instant feedback to where you can see where your hands are going, you can see the timing and even slow it down to singular spots and see the numbers from the OptiMotion. I think that's all pretty wild stuff.
Yeah.
So
I look forward to seeing the progress.
Yeah. There'll be a lot more. I have a question. When's your next one?
So I've completed my grouping.
Okay.
So my next one will be after the Golf Tech Experience. We're doing a Grey Bowl.
Gotcha.
I'll start them back up again. I did have a call with my coach yesterday telling him that I'm not quite to the point of running a warm bath and dumping a toaster in it yet, because my last round was pretty good. So
just hacksaw, maybe a finger or two.
Yeah. You know, maybe a keep razor blades close by, but not quite in the tub with me, that kind of thing.
Oh, man. Well, yeah, I'll have lots more on that soon. It's been an adventure so far. Brutal. In a lot of ways, I've been my own swing for a long time, but it's been an adventure that is absolutely worth the time. So, and you're out of pocket for a while. You're traveling quite a bit here soon. Where are you going?
Victoria National next week for like in a couple of days. When this
punishment,
drops.
More punishment. Yeah.
Yeah. For our Skytrack event, and then straight to Grey Bowl for the Goat Cup with Callaway. And
awesome.
I mean, talk about, you know, we talked about this being the 17 year birthday, which is kind of an arbitrary number, but you want to talk humbling. I'm going to play Victoria National and Grey Bowl in back to back weeks with two industry giants. Like, that will change your perspective on whether or not you should enjoy golf or not.
You need to go to the range long before that.
I'm going this afternoon, first time in a while.
Nice. I always appreciate you, buddy. It's always an interesting conversation. It's fun to bring the forum to life a little bit and some of the conversations that are being had over there. And if you folks are interested in having crazy discussions with the everyday golfer, whether they're being internet-y or not, it's an adventure. So go check it out.
Time out. If you were listening to this today on the day it drops, go to our Instagram page. We're giving away an Odyssey putter.
An Odyssey putter. Nice. Yeah. We're doing a lot of Friday
giveaways.
Good things on the socials, aren't we?
Yeah.
Yeah. And there's some crazy content. I watched, there was a fitting drone footage from,
yeah.
I think, was that at Victoria National?
Correct.
And we just happened to have one of THB's more elite driver swings there.
He murders the ball.
And that was so fun to watch. So yeah, definitely go check out that content on all the socials. It's a wild ride. Josh, have fun, be safe traveling, and good luck.
Thank you, sir.
Hey, if you guys are playing golf this weekend, have fun. Don't rain on your friend's parade. Make their time worth it as well. But also play well, because it's way more fun. We'll see you guys next week.
Now it's time to send it over to Don Brown for this week's Shaft Education, brought to you by True Temper.
Everybody, Don Brown, head of innovation here in our R&D lab in San Diego, California, back here for another Shaft University question. This week's question is about this facility and our handcrafted line of shafts that we make out of here. We've just released the handcrafted Hazardous Gen 5 Yellow. The question is about, what does handcrafted mean for the rest of our line? What that means is you're going to continue to see new products, new innovations come out of our San Diego facility first before they reach that broader market. So we have the handcrafted yellow now, and we're working on some new things that I can't quite tell you about yet, but look for them early next year. Thanks for attending. We'll see you next week.
THP Radio on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network, your number one source for all things golf. Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.